This is The Events That Made Me with me, Liz Taylor.
Hello.
Let me explain what this podcast series is all about.
I've built my success out of planning events all over the world as head of the Taylor Lynn Corporation. But actually, I know that success is built out of a series of life events. So I wanted to find out how the events in your life contribute to your success. Whether it's overcoming adversity, health challenges, or fame, all my guests have been handpicked because they have an event that has made them. With every interview, you will get an extra episode, an air extension. Not the one on your head, but the one where you take the lessons and elaborate on how you can apply it to your business, your career, or just life in general. My cup is always half full. I love people, so let's get cracking and have some fun. Today's guest is an exuberant creative who has carved a name for himself on both sides of the Atlantic as the maven of creativity. So it's my pleasure to introduce you today to the world of international florist Simon J. Lycett. Simon, so our listeners understand the background, you and I were introduced some 25 years ago through mutual friend and celebrity caterer by word of mouth. And I think it's fair to say it was fight at first sight. However, we have continued the working relationship for well over 20 years, and we are the best of friends. But I'd like you to tell us today how Simon Lycett started.
Gosh, it started at the age of 7 when I went to the local town flower show in Warwick, where I was born and brought up and where my mum and dad still live. And for some reason, my dad was working on an August bank holiday, which he never did. So mum needed something to do with us and took us to the local park where there was a huge marquee and I kept badgering her wanting to go in it. And I got my way, which was relatively unusual. And I was absolutely captivated by all of it, but especially by the flowers, the plants, the floral art. And ever since then, all I have ever wanted to do is work with flowers. And 40 something years later, I am so lucky that now I earn my living doing what I choose to do and what I adore.
And what was the journey, Simon? So you obviously did go to school. I can't remember.
My mum and dad had scrimped and saved to send me to a public school. So I had an amazing education. And I, from the age of 7, I went until I was 18. And I loved English, history, all of that. I adored it. It was a really sporty school and I hated it. It was the 70s and 80s, being an effete, flower-loving boy at an all-boys school was a really, really tough trial by fire. But actually, the world's actually quite tough and it builds a carapace on you. And I was called puff and queer from the age of about 13 or 14 every day wherever I went at school. And nowadays it would be called bullying. In those days, you were just told to get on with it. And it happened as much from the staff as it did from my fellow pupils. But I found a niche. It, as I said, it toughened me up. It made me learn to be able to respond to people. And actually, I didn't really care because I knew that what I was who I was. And I was going to be me, and I wasn't really going to let any of that get in my way. I was rubbish at maths. I had to sit my maths O-level 4 times. I loved some elements of school. I hated and felt, I could feel physically sick thinking back at some elements of school, but it gave me an incredible education. It gave me the ability to be able to string a sentence together, hold my own anywhere amongst anyone, and write a half-decent letter. And I think those are the traits that are essential in any life.
And I know that when you left school, you worked for other people before you actually set up your own floristry business. And this podcast is called Events That Made Me. So what do you think was the, apart from meeting me, which was 20 years later, and, you know, we'll get on to that. What do you think at that time was the event that made you, the professional, the creative, the moment when you sort of stood back and thought, this is it?
Well, I obviously acknowledge that I was a husk until I met you. However, the thing that it's really strange trying to work back to what made me, because I've been so lucky that throughout my life, the kindness of strangers and the support of others has helped me get another stage, make another step, create another thing. And I was working for a florist in London called Robert Day, who had an amazing flower shop. It was in the 80s. Lady Di used to buy her knickers in the shop opposite. So this boy from Warwick suddenly came to London and was touched by the hem of fame and glamour and saw all this happening. And then I finished working for Robert, and I had a few weeks off before I was going to go and work for another flower shop called Pulbrook and Gould. And I was asked by someone to do some flowers for a memorial service. A guy in the film industry had died. All the film industry people had put some money together. He'd had a hire company. They'd all put money together. They'd each bought some lilies. They needed someone to arrange all these lilies in a church in Paddington for the memorial service. And I ended up doing it. And I was standing, creating the arrangements and chatting to the lady organising it. And she was putting out orders of service and candles and things. And she said, "Oh, I'd love to be able to do what you do." And I said, "What do you do?" And she said, "Oh, I'm a set dresser." And I said, "Oh, my God, I'd love to do that." And she said, "Oh, would you? I actually need some flowers on a television commercial I'm working on in a couple of weeks. Would you do it?" So I said, "Yes, of course." And this was the mid-late 80s when, do you remember, it was all those sort of the beautiful, those beautiful films were being produced, The Wings of a Dove, Where Angels Fear to Tread, all of those wonderful, gentle, beautiful films. And that was the genre of television commercials. And so there was such detail paid to things like flowers. I remember I was paid for 2 months to work on a clerical medical assurance advert to get the flowers historically right for a dinner party setting that was only ever seen in gloaming candlelight for about 4 seconds. But it was an amazing job. And as a result of that, I then ended up working for Henson's, the people that created the Muppets. And then Jim Henson died very suddenly in America. And they had a big splashy memorial service in America, and they wanted to have one in London. So they asked me if I would create the flowers for the memorial service. And I said, "Yeah, of course." And I said, "Where is it?" And they said, "St. Paul's." And I thought, "Oh, how lovely, St. Paul's Knightsbridge, that beautiful church." And they said, "No, no, St. Paul's Cathedral." And I was like, "Oh, shit, okay." But it was, he used to live on the outskirts of Hampstead Heath, and he and his wife walked there each day. So I transformed the whole of St. Paul's Cathedral into Hampstead Heath. It was before health and safety existed. So a whole load of prop men and I were locked in overnight, and we turfed the aisles. We had park benches. We had foxgloves and trees lining the aisles way before William and Kate got married with trees in the cathedral. And Big Bird walked down the aisle, and it was, I did that. And in America, everybody had been given a butterfly to release, and they wanted to do something in the UK that felt a beautiful personal touch. So I suggested a sprig of rosemary on each order of service, as Ophelia says in Hamlet. She says, "Here's rosemary, it's for remembrance." So I thought it would be a really lovely touch. What I didn't realise was there would be about 800 people at the memorial service. So I had to spend 2 nights sitting up, cutting lengths of rosemary and tying them in raffia. You have to be really careful what your big old mouth ends up getting you into. But as a result of doing all that, I met a guy called Duncan Kenworthy, who went on to start a company called Working Titles. And he was working on a film called Four Weddings and a Funeral. And he said to all the crew working on it, "Well, if you need any flowers, you should talk to Simon." And so they did. And I ended up doing all the flowers on Four Weddings and a Funeral. So that, in a nutshell, is what got me where I am.
And that's one of my favourite films ever. And when you told me that you'd done that, I mean, I was slightly in awe of you, I have to say. But it's interesting listening to that story because, you know, you talk about the rosemary and the buttonholes and all the detail. And it's the attention to detail in the event world that makes you stand out. It makes you the best at what you do. And your attention to detail. I mean, I never forget staying at your home and opening the spice drawer. I mean, that was just outrageous. There was every spice from here to Delhi in alphabetical order, and all the little stickers have got the same, put on the same way. And I looked at this and I thought, this guy is definitely not normal. And you're not normal, which is why I love you so much and I love working with you. This is The Events That Made Me, with me, Liz Taylor, discovering how it's not what happens to you, but how you roll with it that counts. I'm a firm believer that communication and passion are key to a creative talent. And you and I are tarred with a similar brush. And some would say that we're aggressive in our pursuit of business. And I'd like to know what you've learned from me, but we'll come back to that a little bit later. What we're all desperate to know at the moment is, how on earth did you get from the Muppets into the royal household?
It's not what you know, it's who you know, isn't it? So I carried on doing my work, and I was working in London for various caterers, event planners. And then I received a call from a lady called Lady Elizabeth Anson, and she was the doyenne of London parties. She founded 65 years ago, she founded her company called Party Planners. She's the Queen's cousin. She's Patrick Lichfield's sister. And she started way back working because she was so well connected. She was able to help all those gorgeous girls have their coming out balls. And she ended up doing lots of lovely work for Her Majesty the Queen. The Queen Mother was her great aunt. So she was incredibly well connected. And in the late 80s, mid 90s, she was one of the most magnificent, powerful party planners in the world. She had a helmet of auburn red hair. She chain smoked. She drank. She looked incredible. She had the most phenomenal, filthy laugh, wicked sense of humour, and also a phenomenal address book of clients who wanted the very, very best, the pinnacle. So the finest caterers, the finest entertainers, the finest marquee people all worked for her. And she ruled with a rod of iron. And she had a really strange system. So what she would do was she would send an invitation for you to supply a flower arrangement for one of her lunches. And you would turn up and donate a beautiful flower arrangement to the middle of her dining table. She would have people to dinner or lunch, and they would critique your flower arrangement. And by, as a result of what they all said, you would stand or fall. So you would then be asked to work for her again or never to darken her doorstep again. So I was asked to supply some flowers. And I remember distinctly the container I created. I made it out of heads of hydrangeas and I filled it with stems of garden roses. And it was Margaret Merrill, which is one of the most beautiful scented roses, which I didn't know was one of her favourites and also Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother's favourite. And Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, was at the lunch. So they all raved about my flowers, thank God. And as a result of that, I ended up working for Lady Elizabeth. And as a result of working for her, I ended up working for, and still occasionally work for, the royal household. I don't have a royal warrant. But I've been fortunate enough to work on the wedding of the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall. I created the flowers for the dinner the Queen held the night before William and Kate were married. And latterly, I created the flowers for the Queen's platinum wedding anniversary at Windsor and then for Princess Eugenie's wedding to Jack.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, but I'm interested. I mean, your knowledge is extensive. As a matter of interest, what's your favourite flower?
At the moment, at this very moment in time, it's the parrot tulips that are just finishing in my garden. And also it's the scented pelargoniums. Any minute it will become sweet peas and cornflowers, then peonies. I'm so fickle, as you know, that in actual fact, it's whatever's magical to me at the moment.
I mean, I adore tulips. They're my favourite flowers, and my flat is full of tulips, but they droop dramatically, a little bit like I do.
You do have that effect, don't you?
They, Yeah, I do. No, actually, do you know what? My mum, who you know very well, who's 87 and the maven of everything, told me that if you put a penny or a tuppenny piece in a vase, it keeps the tulips straight. They straight and it works. It's absolutely.
Yeah, well, she would. She wants a couple of quid off of you, doesn't she? Gradually, if you put 2 quid pennies in each vase every day, she's putting it in the chopped liver fund. I know your mother.
Don't be mean. I'm giving you a little bit of advice here, which no doubt next time I go to the Savoy Hotel and we do 20 table centres of tulips, I bet your bottom dollar there's a 2p at the bottom of every vase.
And it'll be added to your invoice.
That's one of the things that you will have learned from me, Simon Lysett, now.
I'm Simon Lysett, and you're listening to The Events That Made Me with Liz Taylor. That's the Liz Taylor.
The thing that drives me mad about you is that you cannot take criticism. We handpick the events we work on together because your infrastructure, your logistics, everything that is behind Simon Lysett comes at a price. And I have been fortunate to work with you on some really exciting jobs where we've had the budget to be creative. But Jesus Christ, you know, how many times have I walked in that place and you've gone, I'm not opening the door, just hang on. And then you open the door to reveal this thing and I go, Simon, I don't like it. And it's like you look at me like I've got two heads, like I'm not entitled to an opinion. Now, before you respond to this, I will say that on a number of occasions I have been wrong and the client has adored it. And on a number of occasions I've actually been right. But, you know, you are very, very difficult to work with. However, what you delivered at the Winter White's Ball at Kensington Palace in 3 weeks for me was spectacular. Do you remember it?
I do. It was one of the iconic events that we did. It was one of those first long tables before anybody was in that look that's so current now of two long tables with all their guests seated along them. And it was exactly as you said, pulled together in 3 weeks under the most challenging of circumstances for many reasons, not just that you and I were both working on it. Working in royal palaces is never easy. And it was something that I was quite comfortable with and you found, I remember how challenging you found it because a lot of the royal palaces are so restricted on every single element of everything we do. And I can just remember you saying when I showed you the samples, well, just make them taller. Liz, that's not allowed. Well, make it wider. Liz, that's not allowed. Well, what do you mean? And the joy of it is sometimes I have to tell you these things and there is a higher authority than you. And that in this case was the historic royal palaces.
I never forget when the caterers were measuring the distance between the edge of the table because it was being hosted by the Duke of Cambridge and the dessert spoon. And I thought, you know, what is this all about? But of course, that's what they do. And standing back and just looking. And I remember thinking, I never worried about what you deliver. It never, you know, I knew that we were on the same page. And at the end of the dinner, we stood at the back at the bar with Nicholas and we had a glass of champagne as we watched Prince William jump on the stage with John Bon Jovi and Taylor Swift. I mean, that was one of our iconic moments, I know. And then, I mean, we did, you know, the wedding in Newcastle where we had three nights and like 1,700 people a night. And your infrastructure is just absolutely mega. And we did Gary and Emma Neville's wedding. And again, you know, the cathedral in Manchester's never looked anything like it.
Those are still images that I look back on. I mean, what's a joy is that I think there are fashions in flowers and there are phases where one colour or one style is more or less current or popular. But actually, I look back on every single one of the jobs you've mentioned and there's not a tiniest twinge of I would do this differently or I would change a single thing. They've become iconic images within my portfolio, within your portfolio, but also they've become the sorts of things that other people replicate. And I never mind that. People ask if you get cross that someone's copied your work. And I think, no, because they do it differently. They don't ever do anything the same that I would do it. And that's the joy of it.
Have you ever found yourself saying no? Have you, I mean, not in no that I'm not doing that, but no that I'm not working for you?
Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah, I will. I mean, there are people in this industry, there are individuals in this industry that I know, and it's only in the last probably 5 or 6 years that I've been in a fight. You know, I've got 11, Team Lysa is 11 that need to be looked after, and we have massive overheads. And also, I'm a prostitute. So if I'm going to make money on doing a job that I can proudly put my name to, I'm happy to do it if it's not necessarily my style. However, if I'm going to embark on a process where every time the phone rings, my toes curl up and I think, oh, have I got to talk to them? Life isn't worth it anymore. And so I don't. So there are times when, yeah, I'll either do it by pricing myself out, or I will just say, I'm really sorry. We're not going to be a great fit on that. And I'm happily enough now confident that I can admit it and just say, no, I'm really sorry. It's not going to work.
I mean, I think that's, you know, all credit to you. And I get it. I get it. If the chemistry is not right, the event, well, you can't make it happen. And it's such an integral part of the production of the event, because unlike the theatre, we don't have a rehearsal. You know, it's a one night only. And so all the elements are so key. In all seriousness now, and we can't see each other. So what is the one thing that you've learnt from me?
The one thing I've learned from you is that you can absolutely stand up for yourself with your clients whilst still retaining a level of respect. But I think there's a level of honesty that clients begin to really appreciate. And when I watch how you behave with your clients and with your suppliers, a little bit of that rubs off on me. And I like that.
Well, the one thing I've learned from you is the integrity and the loyalty. And I think that you show, particularly in this industry, an unusual amount of integrity with your clients. And I am a client, but it's such a competitive industry. And you just don't make it competitive. You make it fair. And that's what I've learned from you. Like Simon, many business owners worry about rejecting potential clients or upsetting current clients. You can hear how sometimes what feels like brutal honesty will revolutionise your business in the next episode in your feed, The Air Extension. What's been your proudest moment?
Oh, gosh, that's difficult. I come from a family that don't ever tell anybody really too much praise. And I'm of a generation where that doesn't happen within a family. But I remember when I did, I had just started working in London and I was still going back to my parents in Warwick for sort of Christmases and birthdays and things. And Warwick Castle were filming, Songs of Praise for Christmas Day was being filmed from Warwick Castle. And someone from Warwick Castle contacted me and asked me if I would do the decor for it. And I said, I would do the decor. And they said, we have no budget. I said, I'll do the decor. I'll do it at cost, but I want an on-screen credit. And they said, we don't do on-screen credits. And I said, well, then you don't have my flowers. So they worked their way round, but they couldn't put it up as flowers by. So they said medieval design consultant was what my credit was. So I was medieval design consultant Simon Lysett. And because I was staying with my mum and dad whilst I was working on this, they were hearing all these shenanigans happening. And it was just as videos had become a thing. And my dad went off and bought a video. And that was when he went and bought a video so that he could record my name on the credits. And it's something that my parents, I might cry in a minute, it's something that my parents would never tell me, but that actually was quite an interesting manifestation of their pride in me.
That is fabulous.
Yeah, that was magical.
That is fabulous. That is fabulous.
And I think apart from that, it's meeting the Queen, which is just one of the most surreal moments of your life.
Me or Her Royal Highness?
The real Queen, I'm afraid.
No. As Prince Charles said to me, oh, the other Liz Taylor. And I said, no, sir, the Liz Taylor. But no, I get it. That's true. That's what happened. I'm sure. And I know that you're held in the highest esteem, which is why really I've, you know, hung on and stayed friendly with you. But for the benefit of those who don't know, Simon and I travelled to India last year on a recce for an event that was due to be held this summer. And with us was Simon's husband, Nicholas, who is my favourite fella. And he's just totally, totally different to Simon. He's kind and he's quite quiet and he's respectful and...
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. So handsome, so handsome. But it was quite honestly the best trip I have ever been on, ever. And we were lucky enough to take some time out and explore the country. And, you know, that 5 a.m. at the Taj Mahal and the photographs that you've got of me in the back of the bus asleep, legs akimbo, you know, with my trainers on and no makeup. And we just had, we came home with hilarious videos and a bucket full of memories. And it's not often that a lifelong friendship lasts when work can sometimes be competitive. And by that, I mean that you obviously work with a lot of event organizers. So what do you think it is about our relationship that makes it so special?
I think it's that we're both able to compartmentalize and that we can, that work mode is a different mode to home mode. I think you're one of, I mean, there are very, very few people in the industry that I would have a social life with. I choose not to. Because I think it's much easier to keep them as separate things. And certainly you're one of the very few people that Nicholas and I would choose to go on holiday with that is also someone that I work with. And also, I think you have the most extraordinary, extraordinary way of being really, really, really irritating, beyond irritating. And at the same time that you are so excruciatingly rude, awkward, obstreperous, or embarrassing, you then turn it. So just as I'm thinking, that's it, I cannot be in her company anymore, it's just beyond, you then say just something that is so clever and witty and quick and sharp. And I just think, fuck me, she's done it again.
The best thing you, the nicest thing you said about me, and this is not a source of, but I love this. You said to me, you're the catalyst that makes the room. And that I that was the nicest thing actually you've ever said to me, because you never really said much nice. But
it's true though. And that's why you will be finding, I think at the moment, are we able to explain that we're recording this during lockdown? I think that's why, and I say to you every few days when we chat and I and you say what you're eating and I tell you and you always pull an agony face because you're not eating my delicious food. And I really would bring you food and leave you a tub at the bottom of your stairs, even though you're annoying and you'd never give me my empties back. But I would do it because you are. And I think that this is really tough for you because you are such a people person and your apartment is so beautiful and it is such an entertaining space and you are incredibly entertaining. What's really funny is I can tell when we're with you for dinner, I can tell when you want us to go to bed because you just start gathering everything up, blow the candles out, put the lights out and it's just like, oh, okay, it's bedtime. Is it bedtime now?
Well, let me tell you, during lockdown, I've been practicing my Negroni. I've got the whole cocktail shaker. I've got the whole, all the shebang, the gin, the vermouth, the orange and everything. So when you come and stay, we'll be having the most perfect Negroni. My mission is to help as many people as I can become successful. So please leave a review or a 5-star rating on your podcast platform. Now, listen, Simon, I've just finished writing my book, Tailor Made, in which you feature.
Good.
You recently published your book. Tell us what inspired you to write it.
Well, it's actually my sixth.
Tell us what the what all the books
are. Gosh, so the first one is called Flowers for Four Weddings. And then I wrote Decorating with Herbs, Decorating with Candles, Decorating with Flowers, Flowers with a Flourish. And then the sixth title is The Flower Market Year. And I published it last October. And it's the and I've self-published it because every other book I've done has been slightly an exercise in prostitution. And I am a prostitute and I say that right up front to every client. I do what you pay me to do. I don't have a Simon style other than abundant and immaculate. However, I'm happy to work to anybody's design brief if it fits in my ethos. And the previous books I had done were Exercises in Prostitution, in as far as when you're working for a big organization like France Loisir or American Reader's Digest, they choose the cover picture, they choose the title, and so you lose control of your baby. So I wanted to create a book that was mine, and I'd been wanting to do it for a while, and I'm a big fan of New Covent Garden Flower Market in London, where I buy all my flowers, all my foliage, all my plant material. And after being on a site that it had outgrown, and the world of flowers works is very different now. So the site they were on, they had been in since the late 60s, and in 2005, they realized it needed to change. So in 2017, they actually moved from a building they had been in for a very long time to a brand new purpose-built temporary structure. And in another 5 years' time, they will move once more to a final new combined fruit, veg and flower market. So I wanted to record this space that had been an iconic London building and where I had been buying my flowers for 25 years. And so I put a photographer in, and every month she would photograph for 2 or 3 days me, the flowers I was buying, the people I was buying the flowers from. And it just became a journal. And then she would come back to the workroom to Lysett Towers and she would photograph me creating arrangements, simple decorations. And it's really just my journey of my flower year, what I'm buying, what I'm thinking. And it's the first book I've ever written where I have had a total say on every single thing. The editor is the same editor that I've worked with on umpteen other books, and she likes my style, and she and the designer adjusted the design to fit with what I wrote, because in January and February, there's not much to write about. In May and June, when flowers are so abundant, there's much more to write about. So there isn't anything standard within the book, but it is pure me.
And it's called what? The Flower Market?
It's called The Flower Market Year.
And is it available on Amazon?
It's available on Amazon, but please go and look at small independent bookshops and see if you can find it.
And I know that you've been out in LA filming, so you've got lots and lots of exciting things happening at the moment. And media and TV are hugely powerful tools, but you have to be taken very seriously if you want the following. And your Instagram account is absolutely awesome. Do you think that it's contributed to your continued success?
It's so hard to quantify. I think that's a bit like in the olden days when you used to put an advert, agree to put an advert in a charity program for a dinner or something. And you can never actually quantify whether it's earned you another job, but you feel that you were represented. And I feel now, one of my USPs is that for about 20 years, I've done flowers on television. I'm not bad at it. I'm comfortable in front of a camera. You can ask me to turn up at 7:05 with the flowers. I'll be all prepped. I'll sing and dance and wave my flowers about for the 4 minutes to get you to the 7:00 news, and I'll go. I'm very good. I'm very proficient at doing that. And I think one of my USPs is that I'm okay with a camera talking to people, and I'm okay at dealing with flowers and chatting about my craft. And that's one of the things that I enjoy about Instagram and all social media, is the fact that not everybody can afford to have our flowers at a party, but flowers really knock the rough edges off life. And I think it's, you know what it's like if you walk down the street with a bunch of flowers, everybody says to you, oh, are they for me? Thank you, you shouldn't have. And actually, I really love the fact that just because I do the flowers at big, fabulous weddings, I also want to be able to resonate with my mum, with your mum, with people that would never dream of having our flowers in their lives, but might just be interested in seeing what we do. And they're the people that buy a book. They're the people that watch me on telly. They're the ones that almost give me more validation than the client that comes to me with an enormous checkbook, because they want me because what I'm doing is what they like and what they're interested in. They don't want me just because either they can afford me or because they think it's the fashion to have me.
This is The Events That Made Me, the podcast for people who want to know how confidently to make it to the top. If you could do one gig, where in the world, and I know that you've worked in from Morocco to the south of France to Italy, where in the world would you want to do that one gig?
I'd like to do Flowers for the Coronation in England. Wouldn't it be an amazing, iconic thing? Just because you'd be making history, and I don't mean that in, oh my God, it would be me doing it, just because it would be the most extraordinary, historical, momentous occasion. And you would be woven into the tapestry of English history, of British history. I really consider I'm very British. I don't say English now because it's too jingoistic, but I'm really proud to be British. I'm proud to be a British florist working in an industry that is so undervalued, because we are artists and we are creatives, but we aren't considered that. We're considered that we're just a high street flower shop, and some of us do a bit more. And so I would love to just work on something like, I've been lucky that I've worked in amazing venues on iconic events, but to do something like that would be mind-blowing, wouldn't it?
Do you think they'd have my French band for the party afterwards?
So Liz, I've told you mine. So what would be the one job you would really truly love to do?
I'd like to do the coronation with you. Thank you so much for listening to The Events That Made Me. One of the key things I took from that conversation with Simon is that he's gone through that confidence journey of knowing how and when to be honest with clients. So in the Air Extension episode that you can listen to right now, hear how sometimes brutal honesty can actually impact your business growth. And after that, you can hear the next interview on Wednesday, the 17th of June. Find out how Eamon Holmes became the broadcaster he is today.
What I would say about my job is that getting on the conveyor belt is very, very tough, but staying on the conveyor belt is harder.
If you want to stalk me, search for Liz Taylor Consultancy on all social media sites. I'm there in all my glory. I also have my very own fabulous new website at liz-taylor-consulting.co.uk. The next interview is out in 2 weeks, so see you then.